Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Impoga, and this evening we'll discuss the political lessons of the U.S. Republican Convention. And with us tonight is Dr. Omekongo Dibinga. Dr. Dibinga is a professor of cross-cultural communication at American University. He's also a motivational speaker, a poet, and a TV talk show host. Welcome to the show, Dr. Dibinga.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And also joining us is my colleague, Vincent Macori, host of Africa 54. He joins us by phone from Cleveland, Ohio. Vincent, welcome to the show.
Oh, it's a delight. Thank you.
Also joining us is Karen Atia. She's the Washington Post's opinion deputy digital editor. Hello, Karen.
Hi.
Welcome to the show. Thank you. Yes, let's begin there in Cleveland. Both of you are in Cleveland. Let me begin with Vincent. What's the general mood at the convention right now?
Well, things are heating up today. Today is the grand finale because Donald Trump, concludes the event today with a big speech. So there's anticipation. In fact, this afternoon, people have been waiting to see him come to do the usual run through on the podium. You look at the teleprompter, and everybody wants to see him today. There's excitement. The delegates are going to be coming in this afternoon in anticipation of the big moment this evening. There's a lot of excitement among the Trump supporters, of course. You have to say that it depends on which side of the convention you are. If you're outside, the demonstrators, protesters on the streets who still keep pushing for their different agendas, those who are anti-Trump, of course, and also those who support him, and those others who have different other courses that they've come to present here. The mood generally, is also determined by the sentiment. But all in all, you can say a lot of excitement in the air.
I see. How about you, Karen? So far, what's your assessment of the convention? We know it's Donald Trump's big party. How do you find it going?
Yeah, the convention, this is definitely very many ways a very unconventional convention. Here in the U.S., with the history of violence at Trump rallies, with the recent police shootings and protests around the country, there's been a lot of tension. And so in the run-up to this convention, there was a lot of fear that this was going to be a war zone. The city of Cleveland has spent $50 million on police equipment, on riot gear. There are police from numerous states who are here patrolling the streets. So in very many ways, it was expected that this was going to be a tinderbox of violence. But so far, it's actually been quite peaceful. But as far as the convention itself, this is a very unconventional candidate. I think this is the first time we've had a candidate arrive in his own private helicopter, to his own convention. And we're seeing just yesterday, the former rivals, Ted Cruz, being booed after his remarks, the flap against Melania Trump plagiarizing parts of her speech from Michelle Obama. So this convention has proven to have a lot of very surprising moments, for sure.
I see. Dr. Dibinga, Trump is a unique candidate, you see. Not many people gave him a chance.
Yes.
And he does these things in his own style, in his own way.
That's right.
I think what makes this exciting is not many people gave him a chance. He's pulled it off so far. And people maybe are waking up that the guy could actually pull it off in November.
Yes. What people don't realize about Donald Trump is two things. Number one, he's running his whole campaign like a reality show. And so with reality shows, it's about it's about tension. It's about pitting people against each other. It's about not having real facts, but making sure that everybody's so busy fighting that you can come in and basically take over. Because the second thing that makes him such a genius is his strategy of divide and conquer. He took on 17 other candidates, and he divided them all. And as soon as they were divided, a lot of lessons for the continent for this, right? Mm-hmm. He was able to swoop in and knock them all out. Mm-hmm. And you even still see with all of that, he's the candidate for the Republicans. Even the Democrats now are still underestimating him. Mm-hmm. And it's masterful.
I see.
Yeah. If I may jump in here, you know, one other thing is I think why he caught everybody offside is because they thought everybody plays by the rules. It has been traditional that presidential candidates play by certain rules. They have some type of decorum. He threw all those out the window while the others tried to conform. And by doing that, in fact, he beat them at their own game. He decided, I'm an outsider. I don't play by the rules. I'm not politically correct. I don't really care. And people thought he would last because of that. But just because of that, he trounced them all, and he is where he is today. And, you know, with the same tactics, who knows? Depending on how he appeals to, especially the undecided voters, perhaps they really want a guy like that. He may surprise this country.
Karen, you interviewed Mr. Trump before. I mean, it's difficult to predict, isn't he?
Sorry, come again?
You've interviewed him before. I think it's difficult to predict what his next move would be.
Yeah, and, you know, in very many ways, and we're going to see him speak when he finally announces, when he finally accepts the nomination later tonight. And, I mean, this is his grand show. This is his coming out party. This is his prom, so to speak. But to be honest, a lot of the mood here, a lot of people have actually been surprised. Not by Trump, but actually his children. Donald Jr. has actually been kind of one of the breakout stars, and his children are actually seen as one of his redeeming qualities to undecided voters here who haven't quite figured out, you know, where they stand on Trump. So for those who absolutely can't stomach Trump's sort of, you know, bombastic style, untraditional style, his children, in a way, are a redeeming sort of factor for him. So to a certain extent, it'll be really interesting to watch if he employs Donald, Ivana, his children, as the campaign moves on and more formally takes on Hillary Clinton.
I see. And Vincent, adding on to Karen's point there, even his choice of a vice president, his speech mm-hmm. was well taken yesterday. It was a moderate speech. It wasn't, there was not much of red meat thrown around. I think that must have been a wise move, too.
It was. I remember this is a man who a few months ago, in fact, some say that privately, he did not really want to support Mr. Trump. He was more for Cruz. He did not think this is the kind of a person who should be, you know, running for president. So he was trying as much as he could to be more conciliatory and also to kind of change the narrative and say, okay, this is the guy we have. And so I'm going to try and market him in a different way, try to explain what kind of a person he is. He says he's unconventional, but he is his own man, and therefore we're going to try to sell it. So, well, he has a big task ahead of him because he is an almost like a lately converted supporter of Trump, and yet he has this very important position as the running mate.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Mm-hmm. I think, if I can jump in here, though.
Go ahead,
one
Karen.
Thing, the focus to a certain extent on Trump, you know, we have to also recognize that the GOP also released its platform this week, and looking at the platform, it really kind of shows how broadly the Republican Party itself has embraced some of Trump's ideas, namely, you know, this idea of building walls, the idea of sort of painting undocumented immigrants as a criminal threat to Americans. I think that's one sort of shocking shocking thing to a lot of people that the party of Lincoln, has really, really kind of capitulated to Donald Trump's ideas. And a lot of the speakers who have come to speak, a lot of red meat being thrown around, right? A lot of kind of using fear and American kind of anxieties about national security, about Benghazi, a lot of kind of unsubstantial notes on policy even, right? So I think we have to really look at how this is fundamentally transforming, or some would say destroying, the Republican Party.
His ideas have been embraced in the party platform.
Yes.
So mm-hmm. one must give it to him, at least he's moved the party towards his side, to his line of thinking and policies.
Absolutely. And I think what we need to realize, particularly as it relates to an African context, right, we can think about one thing that makes Donald Trump so successful is that he allows everybody to speak their opinions. Mm-hmm. And then he may come in and quash them with his own opinions. But, you know, in many contexts, in some of our countries, you know, on the continent where we could be doing better, dissent is squashed mm-hmm. and voices are crushed and people are imprisoned and they're not given an opportunity to speak. And I think what we're seeing here with this whole convention and the whole process is give everybody a chance to speak. Let them come out there. But if your views are so strong enough, you should to be able, on principle, mm-hmm. outshine everybody else. You should be able to get everybody on your page, and I think we can learn from that.
He actually allows you to speak your mind as long as you support it.
That's not true, because actually he knew that Ted Cruz wasn't going to support him. He read Ted Cruz's speech last night, and he said, go ahead, get on that stage, mm-hmm. make a fool out of yourself, and I'm going to come and sit down right in the front row and watch you make a fool of yourself. Even Rubio, who called in last night, didn't even mention Trump's name.
Vincent, first, then Karen.
What I wanted to say is that he's not necessarily a person who allows dissent or who allows people to say what they want to say, only when it serves his purpose. Because we've known, mm-hmm. we've seen how viciously can come against a person who seems to be, you know, trying to get back at him. But when it comes to things that serve his purpose, even including yesterday's Ted Cruz speech, he saw that as an opportunity to once again prove that this is lying Ted. He committed himself. He signed a pledge to support whoever gets the nomination. And here he comes on the stage and does not endorse me. He saw that as an opportunity, which I think was so smart. And it has exactly, I think, proved to be kind of very useful and beneficial to him.
Mm-hmm. Karen?
Yes. And I just wanted to add to that point. I mean, this is also a candidate who's called for opening up libel laws in this country. He has tried to ban my paper, The Washington Post, from covering his events after a headline he didn't like. So I absolutely disagree that this is a candidate that is open to views he disagrees with. In fact, you know, a President Donald Trump would be extremely dangerous for media. And in very many ways, it reminded me of numerous African leaders who use libel laws and shut down dissent within the media. So I think, you know, it would be quite worrying. I think we kind of, the theatrics of the convention shouldn't obscure from what Trump has said policy-wise and his actions in the last year or so, which kind of inform what sort of president he would be.
For those just joining us, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from the Voice of America studio in Washington. We're talking about the political lessons of the U.S. Republican Convention taking place in Cleveland, Ohio. Our panelists are Dr. Omekongo Dibinga. He's a professor of cross-cultural communication at American University. My colleague Vincent Macquarie, host of VOA's Africa 54. And Karen Atia, the Washington Post opinion deputy digital editor. And I'm your host, Douglas Simpuga, here in Studio 9. This convention, the world has become like a global village, as they say. Mm-hmm. Talking to people on the continent in Africa, for instance, they are following this convention very mm-hmm. well. Okay, they have been following the whole campaign so far. what's the big takeaway from what's happening here compared to what happens back home?
Well, first of all, I want, you know, both of our other guests to know that I'm not disagreeing with you. I think that, you know, Donald Trump is dangerous. I think that he's a racist, a bigot, a home. I think he's all of those things. But what I'm saying is that when he's allowed to let other people, he lets other people speak, and then he comes back and crushes what they say. Mm-hmm. And in too many instances, we see in some of our countries, some people who dissent are not even allowed to speak their mind. And that's this point I was going to. So again, as it relates to the continent, I think that, you know, going forward, as we watch this, there should be takeaways. You know, what's, and because we have the Democratic Convention coming up next week as well, you know, what's working and what's not working as it relates to our systems of government. For example, I think that one of the takeaways when you look at the our countries on the continent is we do so everything possible to stay in power, mm-hmm. even when our terms are up. And I think that that's what made President Mandela so successful, was that when his term was up, he said, I'm not going to try to change the Constitution, and I'm going to respect it, and I'm going to step down. Mm-hmm. In too many countries on the continent, so many people want to hold on to power, Mugabe style, because politics is the only game in town, other than sports and entertainment, because there are not other opportunities to really excel in other educational fields. And so I think that on the continent, as we're looking at the political system here, we need to look at ways to diversify the path for success, mm-hmm. In our country, so that people don't only see politics as the way to power, whether they're democratically elected or through a coup attempt.
Mm-hmm. Karen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, as far as lessons, like global lessons or lessons for the continent, I mean, I think in a very real way, Trump's rise is a lesson for the elites, right? The media, the political establishment. A year ago, so many of us were saying, this guy, he's just a reality TV star. He's, you know, questionable. A businessman with questionable, you know, practices and ethics. And here he is about to clinch the Republican nomination for president. And a lot of this has been a story about so many Americans who are outside of the sort of 1%, the privileged elite, feeling over the course of, and this is a long time coming, over the course of the last 8 years, 10 years, 12 years, a disconnect with those in power who are supposed to represent their interests. A lot of this is a revolt, in a sense, against Washington, against the ruling class, against a media, and against even to a certain extent Republican elites who have not addressed the economic needs of, frankly, a lot of anxious white middle class or lower middle class or working class people. And I think same in Europe, we're just seeing a revolt in a certain sense that Trump is a symbol. Trump is a symbol, a symbolic middle finger, if I will say, mm-hmm. to the elites, right? Mm-hmm. And to potentially put a man who has ridden the forces of xenophobia, of racism, Islamophobia, misogyny, sexism into the highest office of this land, I think, in Africa and elsewhere, really, it's a wake-up call that this can happen anywhere, right? Mm-hmm. So I really think, I think a lot of us are really sort of wondering, you know, could Trump really do this? And we're about to see in November.
Mm-hmm. I see. Vincent, there are in places like in Africa, Asia, people like him and loathe him in equal measure. There must be something interesting there. There are those who like his style. There are those.
Personally, I think there's another lesson here. I mean, this is a guy who has had an appeal, especially because of his business acumen. He has something that you can kind of look at and say, perhaps he can do this for the country. I think the model here is how many people in the African countries are powerful, successful business people who are willing to spend their own money and take their time to serve their country. I think Donald Trump comes off as a person who's saying, I'm not out here to look for money. I'm not trying to enrich myself by becoming the president of the U.S. In fact, I'm using my own money. But I have these great ideas. I'm a great business person. I want to transfer these skills and ideas and my expertise to developing the country. Now, mm-hmm. are there African business people who can throw themselves into that, public service and spend their own money perhaps to help develop their own countries. This could also be a model.
Mm-hmm. But the sad part about that is that Donald Trump, I agree with you, like it could be a great model, but Donald Trump himself hasn't done that. And that's why people haven't seen his tax returns, right? Because he talks about we can build the country, but all of his products are made outside of America, right? And then the idea is, well, they say, well, he's a businessman. Okay, if he's a businessman, but don't call him a patriot, if that is indeed the case, because he outsources everything. And so he creates that model that it's America first, but his entire career has not been about America first, and it definitely hasn't been about America first if you haven't been white and working for him. And he has cases of racial discrimination going back to the 70s and how he treated black people in New York and his housing development. So I definitely agree with what you're saying, Vincent, as some of us who can look at that from the continent, but what's sad about it is that he's coming off as this great businessman who's had no, he hasn't even paid, in like the last time we checked his taxes in 81, he paid no taxes. Mm-hmm. And what's supposed to be quote unquote more American than paying taxes, right? Yeah. But he's able to portray himself.
So,
go ahead, sorry.
As a quote unquote great businessman, as far as how much he's actually raised, a report came out months ago, how much he actually raised, and he only had something like $2.5 million cash on hand for the campaign. Even Ben Carson had even outraised Donald Trump. Hillary Clinton has managed to raise exponentially more money, millions and millions of more money than he has as far as running the campaign. So
isn't it because he doesn't need anybody's money? He can spend he's willing to spend his personal money.
Yeah. And he gets free media.
But it's this question. I guess the thing is his image. We sometimes forget he's been in our popular culture. He's been in Sex and the City. He's been on The Apprentice. He's been a symbol, a representation of money and power in our American sort of cultural psyche for almost 20 years. Mm-hmm. And so that is not going to be shaken so easily. But I think the thing about, him being a businessman and running for president, being president is not like being a CEO, right? You can't just make executive decisions. We also have a Congress. We also have a Supreme Court. We have branches of government that he needs to work with. And it's actually scary to think that if he really thinks that he can run America like he does a business, that's not exactly how our system works, right?
Yeah.
And so I think there are definitely limits to that analogy.
But I think again, Vincent, following up on Karen's point there, listening to people, let's say from Africa, that's the credit they give to this country, that there are institutions that work. Even if you're a president, you come in as a president, you can't afford to be, you can't have dictatorial powers. You have to follow the way things are laid out. So even the campaign process, the way they're nominating their candidates, they are institutions that are working, which is lacking in most countries in Africa. Do you share that?
Oh yes, definitely. I mean, this is the United States. The institutions work. The Constitution works. You can come on. You can come out with all the greatest ideas you have, but if it's going to contradict the Constitution, we know that there will be a big pushback. The other thing is, for example, you've seen the display of his family. Throughout the week, there has been a Trump on that stage. On one day, there were two Trumps on the same stage. On the stage, can you imagine if that was Africa? And this is a dictator spreading out his children throughout the system. We could expect him, of course, to come to government, appoint his children into different ministerial positions, give them the biggest plum positions in government institutions. I don't think Trump can do that because the system will not allow him. He may try as much as he can to have a number of the Trump people in his presidency or in his White House, but he cannot really go way beyond what the Constitution provides.
Yeah, but this is true. But at the same time, we also still don't have a ninth Supreme Court justice, right? You know, the Constitution does say that the president has the ability to do that. And we see even with our system that's supposed to be working, we still have congressmen and senators who will say that, well, we want to wait. We just decide, we're going to block everything that we put forward. And we have to ask ourselves, is that really an example of the system working? We look at so many cases of police misconduct that's taken place in the country today and how we see, officers, law enforcement continually getting off because the prosecutors are their buddies. policies, and, you know, is the system really, so, you know, there are a lot of things that do work wonderfully in this system, but we can't let our brothers and sisters on the continent be fooled to think that the system is just working efficiently here and it's not always working efficiently overseas, because there are so many issues that are taking place that reflect constitutional or a breakdown of law in this country, particularly affecting those who come from the more disadvantaged communities. And we see fundamental breakdowns of the system every single day. They're just not televised across the globe.
That's it. Karen?
Thank you very much.
All right, I'll see you in the morning.
Karen?
Yes.
Yeah, and this idea of institutions have working very well.
Yeah, I mean, I think to a certain extent, I mean, these are some of the questions, you know, even that we've raised in the post, you know, could our institutions withstand a Donald Trump, right? I mean, could, for instance, we had Donald Trump call for families of terrorists to be executed, which is a serious violation of human rights law. And, you know, the military, generals of the military, just came out and said, you know, we don't do that. We can't do that. And whereas, you know, perhaps in other countries where the executive branch has a grip over military forces, you know, that something like that, maybe perhaps not that extreme, but something like that, a president commanding, you know, his military to commit abuses, you know, does happen, can happen. I mean, I think that's an example of our institutions working. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I think as far as beyond just government institutions, even sort of the cultural fabric, you know, for Africa, particularly, you know, issues of tribe, right, of identity, of sort of how that mixes into politics. We tend to think that in America, everyone is just that identity doesn't matter, that we don't have tribes, that it's Americans. And I think that everybody's an American. And I think Donald Trump has really exposed, you know, the divisions and the changes in our demographics, like in our society, and it's really, I think, you know, for Africa, it's really kind of a reminder of how much identity and sort of demographics play into political systems here in America too, right? I mean, most of Trump's supporters are white, to be honest, and kind of everyone else is against. I mean, I'm very speaking very general terms.
Yeah, you're right.
But yeah. I think it really kind of refocuses, you know, how much identity factors into politics around the world. And again, we tend to think that, you know, tribalism is just an African thing. I would argue that tribalism is going on right here in the U.S. And the multiple sides don't seem to see eye to eye on anything at all, really.
I see. Vincent, we have a few seconds left. What do you expect from the highlights of the final event tonight, the speech?
You know, he's going to have this big show, Mr. Trump. But, of course, he'll say, I am ready to go to work for Americans and to make America great again. And attack Hillary, of course.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
Any last word for...
I think at the end of the day, it's great to observe what's going on, but we can't believe the hype. And on the continent, you know, we need to, as they say, chew the meat and spit out the bones. Take the good and see what we can do with everything else.
Well, gentlemen and ladies, that's the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. We'll be waiting for the big speech. I'm told people in Africa are eagerly going to be waiting for that speech too. So I'd like to thank our panel, my colleague Vincent Makori, host of VOA's Africa 54, Dr. Omekongo Dibinga, professor at American University, and my friend Karen Atiyad of the Washington Post. Thanks very much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Our producer was Jackson Mufunganyi and our engineer was Mark Ferguson. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. You can access this program in case you missed any part of it by going to our main website. And you can also drop us a line. Our email is reporters@voanews.com. thanks very much for tuning in tonight. And until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Impoga, in Washington.